Numbers chapter 10, and then we will be done with the section that has to do with orderliness. Not that the rest of the book doesn't address orderliness and that I might say some things from time to time, but chapter 10, as you remember, is having to do with orderliness, as I have been pointing out previously. Just a quick review. We looked at the importance of seeking God from both chapters 9 and 10, and I mentioned that you are always in the process of either seeking or forsaking God, and we talked about the three powerless guarantees that you will not forsake the Lord, the powerless guarantee of parentage. Just because you grew up in a Christian home doesn't mean that that guarantees that you will never forsake the Lord. The word sage, and how Solomon's wisdom was that which excelled everybody else. Just because you at one point are very wise, even in your walk with the Lord, does not mean that you will not fall. The Bible says, take heed lest you fall. And each one of us needs to walk very carefully. We always need to be seeking the Lord. And then the word age, I was just doing parentage, sage, and age as three things that were in the life of Solomon. And obviously, as it says there in 1 Kings 11:4, it was when he was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And so we've got to be very careful that we don't think that just because I come from a good family and just because I've been wise and gave counsel to other people in the past and just because I am now old, I am set in my ways. Even Solomon was obviously set in his ways, but when he was old, he turned. So those are three powerless guarantees. And I've just really emphasized that we need to remember what it says in Psalm 9:10, they that know thy name, that is to God, they will put their trust in. If you know God for who he really is, you will put your trust in him. For thou, Lord, hast not forsaken them that seek thee. So the importance of seeking God, and then the importance of God's presence we looked at, then the importance of discipline, chapter 9, verses 19 to 23 especially. Twice in this passage we noted the words or the phrase, they kept the charge of the Lord, and that discipline is required to keep God's charge of when to go. It requires physical discipline. It requires mental discipline. That's all review today. We'll change up the color a little bit. Marching orders, as we see here in chapter 10. What makes for orderly marching? What makes for people on the move doing it in an orderly fashion? That's what we're going to see here in chapter 10. And so I'm going to break it down, and obviously I've alliterated it, just for the sake of remembering what's in this chapter. And I'm calling the first thing the signal. A signal is very important for orderly marching. Let's read chapter 10 and verses 1. I think it's 1 through 9. 1 through 10. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, make thee two trumpets of silver of a whole piece shalt thou make them, that thou mayest use them for the calling of the assembly and for the journeying of the camps. And when they shall blow with them, all the assembly shall assemble themselves to thee at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And if they blow but with one trumpet, then the princes, which are heads of the thousands of Israel, shall gather themselves unto thee. When ye blow an alarm, then the camps that lie on the east parts shall go forward. When you blow an alarm the second time, then the camps that lie on the south side shall take their journey. They shall blow an alarm for their journeys. But when the congregation is to be gathered together, ye shall blow, but ye shall not sound an alarm. And the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow with the trumpets, and they shall be to you for an ordinance forever throughout your generations. And if you go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresseth you, then ye shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and ye shall blow... and ye shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and ye shall be saved from your enemies. Also in the day of your gladness and in your solemn days and in the beginnings of your months, Ye shall blow with the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they may be for you, or to you, for a memorial before your God. I am the Lord your God. So as I just read this, did you get everything about what each trumpet blow means? Did you get all the details here? I didn't, and I still don't. Here's what we do know. That what God gives here in general, there were specifics so that these people knew that when they heard a trumpet sound, whether it's the tone, whether it's the length of the blow, somehow they knew exactly what that meant. And there are some key words here that'll help us, but we would still have questions. But I've got a question. Brother Paul, would you turn that heat down? Burning up here. I need to say something here. The reason we keep those doors closed is because the air from outside comes in, hits that thermostat, and makes it seem like it's freezing cold in here, so it cranks the heat up, and then it gets really warm. So when you find those doors closed, please leave them closed. That would really help tremendously. But we're looking at this signal. Why would there be a trumpet signal, especially in here, moving? When we've been looking at the fact in chapter 9 that how did they know when they were supposed to go? With the cloud. Well then, why a trumpet? Or am I the only one when I read this, I go, wait a second, isn't the moving pillar enough to let the people that need to let them know that they need to go? Yes. But in order to do so in an orderly fashion, how are the people on the north and on the west going to know when the people on the east have already moved out? Remember, you got 2 to 3 million people. Now, if you're on the east and you know you're the first ones to go, the people on the east could go, okay, it's time to go. You know, the cloud's moving. Everybody else is going, yeah, but how do we know when to leave? How do we know when the east camp has gone far enough that we can now follow? The south, I should say. Because the east goes first, then the south goes. And then there's other people who are supposed to go. So my point on this is that corporate obedience, when I say corporate, all of us together as a church, corporate obedience to God does not permit individuals to just start doing their own thing. If everybody does their own thing, then what happens to the whole group? It becomes a mess. There's got to be some kind of order that takes place. It would be chaotic if there were not specifics given, not just the cloud moving, but now the people taking responsibility for when is this camp going to go, and when is this camp going to go? When are the Gershonites and these Gershonites and the Merarites, when are they going to go? When are the Kohathites going to go? When is this the west camp and the north camp? God knows, and he has so ordered it. So corporate obedience requires each individual's obedience. There's got to be that obedience of individuals based upon what God has told the entire group. Otherwise, things fall apart. Orderliness has to prevail. Is there comments or questions about this? Go ahead, Paul has.
The silver trumpets are mentioned, because whenever I think of trumpets, I always think of the shofar ram's horns, and I've heard those blow. They're absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I hadn't remembered about the silver trumpets.
Yep. This is the first, and I'm going to be talking about this when I get more into this signal, that this is the first time the silver trumpets are mentioned in the Bible. And they are used throughout, but there is the shofar. That's the ram's horn, which to me is a very irritating sound. I like the silver trumpets. And the ram's horns would be for something else. But if you don't mind my waiting, that's a very good question. I'm glad you brought that up, because that sets people's minds up to receive what we're going to have here in just a minute. So My point about this is this, that I must realize that before I can move, and when I do move, I need to do it with other people in mind. I can't just go, well, I'm tired of this. The leader hasn't done anything. He hasn't said anything. I'm just going to go do my own thing. Chaos ensues. Every person, whenever you're in any group, whenever you're in a church, whenever you're in a business, wherever you are, if you're going to do things in order, there has to be rules, and people have to follow those rules. Kyle and Delitzsch, two German commentators from the 1800s, I believe, they said this, although God himself appointed the time for removal and encampment by the movement of the cloud of his presence, signals were also requisite for ordering and conducting the march of so numerous a body, by means of which Moses, as commander-in-chief, might make known his commands to the different divisions of the camp. This is by Wenham in his commentary. Though they were to be guided by the cloud, more precise means of control were necessary if the people were to march in the tight-knit formations envisaged in chapters 2 and 3. So you got to go back to chapters 2 and 3 and see what God instructs there, and you're going to go, well, how's this going to happen? Get to chapter 10 and you find out. God is giving the order. Now, talking about these trumpets, and I'm getting into starting with what Paul has talked about. What did these trumpets look like? We know they're one piece because that's what it says. Verse 2, make thee two trumpets of silver, of a whole piece shalt thou make them. How does a trumpet look today? Somebody describe to me a trumpet today. How would you describe to somebody who had never seen a trumpet before how it looks? Somebody? Okay, hang on, Janet. Brandon's coming. Describe to us a trumpet.
I would say like a bell-shaped end that tapers down to a point that you would blow into.
Okay. Is there anything else about that trumpet, a modern-day trumpet?
I mean, circular, but...
Okay. So you've got those curves. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Did you know I one time played cornet? I took lessons for a semester at Nickerson High School. Total waste of time. Because my teacher didn't do anything. But the cornet is kind of like a trumpet. And you blow in and it goes like this, and then it goes out the bell. That's what we typically think of when we think of a trumpet. But as I was studying this and I found some things that people were saying, they were made of silver, but probably not curved. So there was no curve. It was like Janet first said, they were just straight. Just a straight trumpet. You don't have the little, what do you call them?
Valves.
You don't have those valves. It's just a straight instrument. How do we know what they look like? Well, has anybody ever heard of the Arch of Titus? You know what the Arch of Titus is? It's close to the Colosseum in Rome. It was built in 81 to 82 AD, soon after the destruction of Jerusalem. And it depicts upon this arch, General Titus carrying away from the temple the things that they gathered before they destroyed the temple. For example, in the arch you're going to see the golden candlestick, and you're going to see trumpets. Okay, so here's the picture that appears under the Arch of Titus. You see the golden candlestick. Remember, this is 81 to 82. This is like 11 to 12 years after the destruction of Jerusalem. This arch is in Jerusalem today. This arch is in Rome today. You can go and you can see this. I've been under that arch. I took pictures of it. This is not mine. But what do you see right here? Two trumpets. And we believe, I think it's Josephus who confirms this, that this would have been what the trumpets look like as far back as the book of Numbers when they were first told how to make them. And they're like, I forget what the dimensions were, but I think those are like 2 feet? I think it was even longer than that. So they're rather long. That's the silver trumpets that are there. The point, no voice could be loud enough in the midst of 2 to 3 million people to say, Time to go. It's not going to work. But the shrillness of a trumpet is something that carries even to the outermost part of the camp. So sound trumpets was, it was for the summoning the entire congregation, according to verse 3. The congregation, it's talking about its representatives, to call them to the tabernacle. In verse 4, we've already read this, it was to summon the leaders, the heads of thousands, by the blowing of that trumpet. There was a certain sound made in that trumpet where they knew, oh, this is the leaders. The leaders are supposed to hightail it to the tabernacle. There's the setting out, and this is what concerns us. When they were ready to move, then there was a certain blow on the trumpet. Two words are used for this. There's the word blow, taha, and that signified blowing in short, sharp tones. Then there's the alarm, ruang, and that signifies blowing in a continued peal. That's all I could find on the different ways these trumpets were blown. All we know is this, that when that first continual peal was blown, the camps on the east were to go forward. So it was probably a long blast. Verse 5, east tribes knew it's time to get going. When the second continued peal blows, the camps on the south were to take their journey according to verse 6. But only those two camps are noted. It only implies that there'd be another peal for the west, another peal for the north, and then they would all know when to go. There's what we see in verse 9, the salvation from enemies. The words used at the end of verse 9, you shall be saved from your enemies. Somehow, when they would go to war, and this is illustrated in Numbers chapter 31 and verse 6, the people who were going to war would be reminded of something. According to verse 9, what would they be reminded of? You are remembered before the Lord your God. And they would blow this to remind the people, God goes before us. He is the one who will take care of us. Then verse 10, the blowing of trumpets would be during significant times. Those significant times, days of gladness, sacrifices, and so forth. It's the only way, as I was thinking about this, that things could be done corporately without people doing anything on their own. Therefore, in a moment, people would know what's happening. It was kind of like, today you would probably get a text, hey, here's what you're supposed to do, and everybody would have that at the same time. This was kind of like text messaging the entire. No, here's what's happening. You heard the trumpet. You know what that trumpet sounds like. You know what that particular sound is all about. And people would begin to operate. They would start moving. Now, this is very practical. And it's just very interesting to understand that God gives them specifics for how they are supposed to live. This is the first mention of trumpets in the Bible. Somebody made this observation. This is Winham in his commentary. In Europe, the faithful have traditionally been called to worship by church bells. But in the last day, we, the elect, will once again be summoned with a loud trumpet call. Isn't it interesting that you get into the New Testament and how are we going to be gathered into the clouds with the Lord? What is it that the Bible specifies? In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. 1 Thessalonians 4:16 mentions the trump of God. Revelation chapter 4, verse 1 talks about a trumpet. This is when John is in the Spirit, And he says, after this I looked, and behold, the door was open in heaven. The first voice which I heard was as it were of a trumpet talking with me, which said, come up hither, and I will show thee the things which must be hereafter. I'm not going to recap everything we learned in Revelation. But there's the trumpet. Isn't it interesting how God uses the trumpet? And that this is the first mention here in Numbers chapter 10. But the trumpet is mentioned throughout the Old Testament. The silver trumpets, they were used in the temple and so forth. But let's learn more about this by looking at who sounds these trumpets. According to verse 8, who does the sounding? The sons of Aaron. The sons of Aaron. So this responsibility is given to none other leaders than the sons of Aaron. The role of the priests in combat and the Lord's promise to respond to the trumpets suggests that his people were to be involved in holy war. That is, they were to fight the battles of the Lord, who, of course, would lead the way against his enemies and guarantee success. But the who, sons of Aaron, those who are authorized to blow, ensures that the sounding takes place in the vicinity of the sons of Aaron in the camp. And where are they stationed in the camp? Right in the center, right in the very center, closest to the tabernacle. So the sounding comes from within the very center of the camps. Here you see Moses, Aaron, the priest, and they would be in here, perhaps, and it's right in the center of the entire encampment, as you can see right here. So they're the ones who do the sounding. How many sons of Aaron are there at the time that this happens? How many sons did Aaron have? What happened to the first two? God killed them. Who are the two sons of Aaron at this time? Anybody know? Yeah, what were their names? Eleazar's one of them. Ithamar, very good, is the other one. Thus, two trumpets. What if there were more sons of Aaron? Well, this is kind of interesting because by the time the temple is built, that's not right. I don't have a slide for that. When the ark was brought into the temple during Solomon's time, 2 Chronicles 5, 12 to 14 says, there were 120 priests blowing the trumpets. Can you imagine hearing 120 trumpets at the same time? Has anybody here ever heard a trumpet choir? Yeah. Again, I'm referring back to my college days at Bob Jones. They used to have a trumpet choir where I forget how many guys. It was just like 40. But I'm telling you, when there's 40 guys blowing trumpets, it is phenomenal. I can't imagine what 120 would be like. So there's the sounding. There's also a sequence. And this is really what this chapter is about that I really want to get into, is how do they know and how does this camp move out? What is the order of this marching? Let's talk about the when. This gets a little bit technical, but I think it's helpful. The first Passover takes place the first month, 14th day, and it's the first year. So this has nothing to do with our dating today, okay? I am just starting to give you here when the first Passover took place, because the Lord said, this is the beginning of months to you. And he said, and then everything's about the first year. So on, this is not January 14th of 01. This is the first month, the 14th day of the first year when they were coming up out of and of Egypt. Brother Paul, how low did you turn that thermostat down? Because now you've got the air conditioning on. Do you need some help? What does it say for the temperature?
69.
Wow. Well, that's why the air conditioning's on. Because when it hits that, bump it up, just turn it off. if you know how to do that. Yeah, now we're in trouble, folks. Okay, because that's the air conditioning that's coming on now. Some of you people who get upset about the temperature in here, okay, you learn that crazy thermostat. That thing is nuts.
That's where the devil resides.
Yeah, it's where the devil resides, and that's what people get so upset about. Well, then you can be in charge of it. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so the Passover was observed the first month, the 14th day of the month, the first year. Israel departs from Egypt when? On the 15th, the next day, but it's actually just after midnight of the 14th. This is just a reminder. They arrive at Sinai, according to Exodus chapter 19 and verse 1, the third month, the first day about that first year. So between the time they leave Egypt, they arrive at Sinai about 45 days later. The second Passover, when you read Numbers chapter 9, go to chapter 9, and the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the first month of the second year after they were come out of the land of Egypt. And we know that this is the Passover according to verse 5. They kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month, the second year. So I'm giving you kind of a time schedule of when this is taking place here in Numbers chapter 10. So they depart from Sinai, here we are in chapter 10 now, on the 20th of the second month. So they had just observed about 30, 40 days earlier, the Passover. Now it's time for them to depart from Sinai. How long have they been at Sinai? They arrived the third month, the first day about, now they're departing. Almost a year later, it's more like 11 months. Does that make sense? Okay, this is when they're departing, and Janet has a question or a comment, and the microphone is coming to you.
I was just wondering, during that almost year interval, is that when they built the temple or the tabernacle?
Yes. Yes, the tabernacle was built in that time in between there. Exactly. Okay. Where? They're coming out of the wilderness of Sinai. I don't have time to get into where I think this is. I don't think this is on the Sinai Peninsula where they are. I believe this is in Arabia, Saudi Arabia. But that's, you'd have to go back and listen to what I did on the book of Exodus years ago. This is the very first moving. The first moving, it's according to the Lord's commandment by the hand of Moses. And in verse 14 is where we begin with the order of the marching that it does take place. And it is identified as the journeyings of the children of Israel according to their armies when they set forward. That's how it ends in verse 28 of that same chapter. So from 14 to 28, we're going to start in verse 14. It ends in verse 28. We look at the sequence, the order that takes place here. So, let's look at verse 11. And it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year that the cloud was taken up from off the tabernacle of the testimony. And the children of Israel took their journeys out of the wilderness of Sinai, and the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran. And they first took their journey according to the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. In the first place, verse 14, went the standard of the camp of the children of Judah according to their armies, and over his host was Nathan the son of Amminadab, and over the host of the tribe of the children of Issachar was Nethaneel the son of Zuar, and over the host of the tribe of the children of Zebulun was Eliab the son of Helon. Okay, so the very first camp to move, here's the illustration, is this camp right here. This is east, north, west, south. East, Judah, Zebulun, Issachar, they are the first ones to go. But notice that there's a word used here that says the standard. What is the standard that's mentioned under verse 14? In the first place went the standard. Brother Paul. We know it's a banner of some sort. I like to think of it as a flag, as he said. But it also could have been an emblem on top of a pole. But somehow that standard went first. Somebody held that standard and you knew where the front was. You knew who was leading, at least from your camp as you went. So the standard is a banner, it's a flag, or an emblem. Let me give you something here that I found very interesting that came from Kyle and Delich, and this is something that I've mentioned before concerning something else. According to rabbinical tradition, the standard of Judah bore the figure of a lion. That of Reuben, the likeness of a man or of a man's head. That of Ephraim, the figure of an ox. And that of Dan, the figure of an eagle. So that the four living creatures united in the cherubic forms described by Ezekiel represented upon these four standards. This is really interesting. The Bible doesn't say this. This is rabbinical tradition. The standard of Judah bore the figure of a lion. And somebody said, I think Kyle and Delich, that according to tradition, it was a green flag or it was a green banner with this emblem on it. Why is that of any interest? Well, go with me to Revelation chapter 4. He's already mentioned Ezekiel. Do you all remember what Ezekiel saw? You know the song, Ezekiel saw a wheel way up in the middle of the air? Remember that? You know, y'all have never heard that song, okay. Texas Boys Choir sang that once. I know about the Texas Boys Choir because it was a Bob Jones. I was a senior. And they did Ezekiel's Wheel. They sang it, and they were doing choreograph to it. Ezekiel saw a wheel way up in the middle of the air, and they were doing all these motions, okay? So my buddy and I, how many remember Rick Cross? Rod, you don't know this about Rick, but he and I would team up, and we had a student body meeting where the whole student body meets in the amphitheater of 7,000. And this is my senior year. And we thought, hey, we'd always talk chip to each other. And I can't do it now. My voice just won't handle it. But we would sing in chipmunk. Our voices really pitched high. And we would have so much fun in the dorms because we were both hall leaders, dorm monitors. And we would start singing what we heard the Texas Boys Choir sing. And other guys heard it and said, man, you've got to do that in front of student body. So we both rented some tuxes as we were the artist series that day, and we came out. How many have been to the amphitheater? Yeah, and you've got the two sides, and we walked out to the center of the stage, and we bowed, and the students had no idea what we were going to do, and then we began to sing this thing in chipmunk. And we did all the motions. Well, then we became famous on campus for the chipmunk, and I'm 6'4", and Rick Cross is what? 5 foot maybe? And so we were much deaf, and we just had such a good time doing that. And I always think of that when I read Ezekiel chapter 1 because of the Texas Boys Choir singing it and then we singing it. But in Revelation chapter 4, similarly, you read verses 7 and 8, the first beast was like a lion, the second beast, like a calf, an ox, and the third beast had the face as of a man, and the fourth beast was like a flying eagle. Verse 8, the four beasts had each of them six wings about them, and they were full of eyes within, and they rest not day and night, saying, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come. My point is this. You will see these four creatures associated with the beasts mentioned in Revelation chapter 4. You see it there in Revelation chapter 4. You're going to see it in Ezekiel chapter 1. According to rabbinical tradition, this actually took place long before that with the standards that each of the four main camps had. So, there's one other thing I want to note. Rod would be interested in this. In art, what do you call it? Medieval art. Two-dimensional. But even in three-dimensional art, those four creatures are associated with the four what? The four Gospels. For example, and I haven't even told Juanita I was going to do this. I took this picture in Germany. I think it was when we went to France to that cathedral, right across from which we bought our cuckoo clock. Okay, so in that cathedral, there are four tall pillars. And I knew about this. Well, it doesn't show up there as well. But this, and you can't see that creature very well, but that is a lion. And Matthew is on a pedestal above this lion because Matthew in art, whether it's three-dimensional or two-dimensional, is always associated with a lion. Why? What is written in Matthew that he would have that associated with a lion? Megan? I'll repeat it.
Matthew presents Christ as the coming king.
Yes, exactly. Matthew presents Jesus Christ as the coming king, so it has to do with royalty. Well, the tribe of Judah is associated with the lion according to rabbinic tradition. Why?
Revelation 5:5.
Okay, he is presented as who and who is it? Lion from the tribe of Judah. Isn't this interesting? This is just interesting to me. That Christ is presented as the Lion of Judah, and Matthew, as Megan says, presented Christ as the coming king. Because Matthew is written to what audience? The Jews. And the Jews need to understand something. The Messiah they have rejected is the King of the Jews. He is the Messiah. Well, elsewhere in that cathedral, and you can maybe tell by this part of this creature what it is. What does it look like? It's an ox. This is Mark. Mark presents Jesus Christ as a servant. As you read the book of Mark, you'll see that. The tribe of Ephraim would have had on their standard, perhaps, an ox. Luke. The gospel writer Luke, what is he? What would this be in the depiction that we were talking about earlier? A man. Luke emphasizes the humanity of Christ. As you read the book of Luke, it's just very interesting to see that. Then you've got the tribe of Reuben. John, what's the creature here? That's the eagle. What does that have to do with? This one's a little bit harder. The heavenly one. John presents Jesus Christ as God himself. Not that the others don't, but this is an emphasis in the book of John. And it's interesting that the tribe of Dan would be the one who had the eagle on the standard. That is just something I find interesting, and that's why I wanted to share it with you. Okay? Any comments, questions about this in particular? Nope, that was just at no extra charge. Okay. So, in the sequence, first of all, you've got Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. And there we go. Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. Then in the second, the Gershonites and the Merarites, tabernacle, verse 17. And the tabernacle was taken down, and the sons of Gershon and the sons of Merari set forward bearing the tabernacle. So right after the east camp started going, here's what's going to happen. Now the Merarites and the Gershonites are going to move. What's missing in verse 17? Exactly, Claudia. The Kohathites aren't there. Wait a second. What's the order? What did we remember? While they're starting to move, or before they start to move, what are the Merarites and the Gershonites doing? They're starting to deconstruct the tabernacle, but before they do that, what did Moses and Aaron and the priests do? Remember this? They went inside the tabernacle and covered the furniture because nobody was to see those things other than the priests. So Before they take this down, the Gershonites and Merarites, before they deconstruct the tabernacle, they have already gone in and covered those items. These three tribes, or the camp of Judah, is marching with the lion as their standard. Then comes Reuben, Simeon, and Gad in verses 18 to 20. And we don't need to read that. You can see that for yourself. That's these camps. Now Reuben, Simeon, and Gad are moving not behind this camp, but behind the Merarites and the Gershonites carrying the tabernacle, the frame, the curtains, the boards, the sockets. They're carrying those things. Okay. Well, hang on. Hang on. That's the good question. What are the Kohathites doing? And that's what we're going to see next. Because look at 21. And the Kohathites. Does this answer your question, Kay?
Okay.
Yeah. Now the Kohathites set forward, bearing the sanctuary. Why are they leaving behind everybody else in this order? Because here, now you finally have the Kohathites. The tabernacle's been deconstructed. They come in and they put those things on a cart, right? No, they have to carry them. Now the Kohathites come in their order. But notice what it says there in verse 21. And the other did set up the tabernacle against they came. Now that's King James for confusion, okay? It's very hard to understand right there. What? Because we don't talk like that. So I'm going to give you, there's the King James, the other did set up the tabernacle against they came, but let's put it in more modern from the New American Standard. And the tabernacle was set up before their arrival. New King James, the tabernacle would be prepared for their arrival. Here's what's taking place. God has so ordered this in such a way that the reason the Gershonites and the Merarites have gone is so that they are first to arrive at the next place. And what are they busily doing when they get there? They're getting ready for what? The Merarites and the Gershonites. They're getting ready for the arrival of the Kohathites, who have the instruments of the sanctuary with them. The holy objects would then be put in the temple immediately because it's already set up. And as I got to thinking about this, I thought, you know what? It seems that these sacred objects were either always on the shoulders of the Kohathites or they're in their place in their tabernacle. They're not just sitting out in the open. As if God waits on us. We are always waiting upon Him. Then comes Ephraim, Manasseh, Benjamin on the west. Then comes Dan, Asher, Naphtali on the north as they go. Next place, whether it's 3 days later or whatever, that's when the tabernacle is set up and ready for the holy instruments. But there's something interesting more on this. What actually goes in front of everybody out of the tabernacle? The Ark of the Covenant. Look at verse 33. And they departed from the mount of the Lord 3 days' journey, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them in the 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. We talked about this last time, how that the Ark of the Covenant preceded everybody. But the separate camps composed, those four camps composed of three tribes each, moved as the trumpets commanded, according to the sounding of the trumpet. Everything was done in order. All heard and all obeyed. the trumpet signals, they knew when it was their time to go. My whole point in going through this whole exercise through Numbers chapter 10 is this. God does things in order. When the others see them going through the wilderness, can you imagine a group of people numbering 2 to 3 million going through the wilderness? You would think, you would expect chaos. Not when God's in charge. And not when his people are in charge. They do things decently and in order. So much so that when we get to Balaam, here in the book of Numbers, he's going to look at these tribes and go, wow. Remember this? He's going to say, I forget how it's stated there because the thought just came to me, but it has to do with these people are in such order. And it was a testimony of God to a false prophet as to the tremendous order that God does things in. Any closing comments or questions? Brad, and I'll wait for the mic. It's coming to you.
It is interesting to study the order and look at how God does things. But in Exodus 32:8, I've been working about paths and ways and God's paths and ways. And in 32:8, he says, they would not learn my ways, or they departed quickly out of my way. They were observing God working in a marvelously precise way, but the children of Israel never picked it up, really. In fact, once they got to the promised land, they relied on themselves and were a tremendous disappointment to God.
Yeah, they forsook God's ways. Interesting you would say this, because as you read the prophets, one of the things that the prophets are preaching against the people is you do not know the ways of God. You don't know. And that's your problem. Folks, as you read your Bible, as you read the Old Testament, get to know who God is. Get to know that he is a God of order. That's why I keep emphasizing this, that God does things orderly. And we should do the same. Learn to know the ways of God. Janet.
Just when you're talking about the trumpets and blowing at different times, it made me think of the military, especially in like Civil War times past. I don't know if they still do it, but you know, time to get up, time to eat, time to go, time to go to bed. Charge all those.
Yeah, the trumpets they use trumpets in the military. Another thing, especially in the war between the states and in the Revolutionary War, was the standard. And somebody would bear that standard. Have you heard of the guys who would fall? And somebody would grab that and hoist it into the air at the risk of his own life to make sure that that standard was up. So that everybody knew, hey, we're not retreating. That standard is still going, and we need to follow that standard. Let's close in prayer. Lord, may we be a reflection of who you are. Thank you. As we give thanks this week, especially this week, thank you for the fact that you are faithful and that we know what you're going to do because you're a God of order. So we know that the trumpet is about to sound. We know you're coming. May we be ready to move as you take us up into the clouds. We pray in Jesus' name.